It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum of Solace number 109. Now, just a word of warning. This will be the last one for a couple of weeks as yours truly is heading off to Australia. So looking forward to meeting all the Solace people out in Australia. It's great that we get so much correspondence from there. Speaking at the Onward conference organised by the Katoomba Convention in Sydney, I'll also be in Melbourne and it'll be good to be down under. But it means that we won't be recording this and we'll be coming back to this in July. So we're just taking a wee break. It'll also be a time, I mean, there's been just so much news, so many different things. In here in the United Kingdom, we've got the general election and the result of that is quite extraordinary. So many things going on, but we really have to begin, of course, with the continual terrorist attacks.
They went up and started stabbing this girl, three of them, and then they stabbed another guy, I think, if I remember right, that was a bit shocked. They started running up the road, I started going, everybody run, the terrorists run, 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 they're stabbing everyone. When they first see him, they went, this is for Allah, and they run up, they stabbed this girl.
That's three now in 3 months in the United Kingdom, and it's likely that there will be more. Now, I just want to observe certain things happening. Number one, the reaction to this last one, the reaction time is much slower. It's as we're getting more and more used to it, I think this is going to become much more perceived as a way of life. Secondly, just one or two things that occur to me. Why is it that we find it so difficult to say the term Islamist terrorism or to associate it with Islam at all? Now, there are lots and lots and lots of different reasons, but people are getting a little bit fed up with all of this. And actually, that does feed into the uber right narrative when people are not prepared to face up to things, because it is not the case that every Muslim is responsible for this. But neither is it the case that Islam has nothing to do with this. Now, I want to do a wee thought experiment with you. Try this. Imagine that instead of Islamist terrorists, these last three attacks had been carried out by some wacko, uber right-wing, American fundamentalist, you know, Ku Klux Klan type, inverted commas, Christian group. Do you think that Jeremy Corbyn and our politicians would all be standing up and our journalists and saying, well, Christianity is a great faith and, you know, we must, the various communities. I can tell you this, that the secular groups and the left-wing groups and the liberal groups and many of the right-wing groups as well would always say, this is Christianity. This is terrible. This is appalling. Well, you know, when you talk about religion, our good friend Brendan O'Neill, for example, has a wonderful piece on Spiked where he says, you know, Buddhist terrorists, because they do exist, Hindu terrorists, and they do exist, they're all named and mentioned. It's interesting, isn't it, that we have no qualms at all about speaking about Catholic paedophile priests, as though somehow their paedophilia is something to do with their Catholicism. And yet, they struggle to say Islamist. Now, I watched one of these election debates, the one the BBC had in which Theresa May did not appear. Now, having seen how it was conducted, I was absolutely understood entirely why she didn't take part. But there was one moment in that which was very revealing. And it was Paul Nuttall of UKIP, who doesn't come across well and is often a caricature and a figure of fun. But he actually said something that later on Theresa May was to say after the London attacks, the second London attacks. And what he said was this. He said that we need to discuss Islamist terrorism. Now, he specifically, I listened very carefully, that he didn't say Islamic, he said Islamist. And immediately he was howled down by the other participants as being racist and everything else. I mean, it was just an absolutely ludicrous thing. Why? Because that is just the truth. These are not just people who are mentally ill. These are not just people who are wicked. These are people who are motivated by a particular Islamist ideology. Again, not saying all Muslims. But until we face up to that, why can't our society face up to it?
Omar Afzal, who's a board member of the Muslim Council of Scotland.
We need to have a strong counter-narrative to put out there that can close down the narrative that the extremists are putting out. And this is something actually that we've probably lost a step on. One of the things that the government has done over the last few years under Theresa May's watch, both as Home Secretary and also as Prime Minister, is they've always turned to kind of liberal Islamic scholars as opposed to the more conservative ones. Now, what you would find is from the more conservative Islamic scholars, there'd be an extra weight with any edicts that they issue or any statements that they put out. So what we actually need to do is turn the focus back away from the more liberal scholars and actually give prominence to the more to the more traditional scholars who can deconstruct the narrative. And I think something like that can be extremely effective in combating part of the extremism that we see.
There's a disturbing trend that goes on here, and it comes across in the popular mindset. If people were more nuanced and subtle, then it wouldn't be such an issue. But because people are theologically thick, and actually I think politically, and in many ways we live in such a dumbed-down society, then this comes across in popular media. And this is how it works, because they go, okay, we can't say Islam because we don't want to be Islamophobic, but it is religion. So all religions get mixed together. And this is where you get the excuses coming in. So Piers Morgan, that wonderful commentator full of intelligence and sense. Sorry for our American listeners, that's sarcasm and irony. Piers Morgan, he was on Good Morning Britain, and he said,
I think this is crucial to this debate. We have to separate the vast majority of Muslims in this country who are not Wahhabi and don't follow this extremist, draconian interpretation of Islam from those who do, because they are completely different people. I mean, it's like dealing with Christian fundamentalists against moderate Christians, isn't it? It's the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Extremists are extremists.
Basically, Christian fundamentalism is the same as Islamic. Now, I may be missing something, or it's much more likely that Piers is missing something. How many people are cowering in fear because they think they're going to be attacked by Christian terrorists? I haven't come across anyone like that in our culture. I don't think it's there at all. And yes, I suppose you might get some people who might say that they were Christian out of the 2 billion that do, but it's not part of our faith. And Morgan, Piers Morgan, I'm sorry, but he's a clown when he speaks like that. And it does a great deal of harm because people just go, well, it's just religion. Or then you get the excuses, such as another one that I heard often here. There are more Muslims killed by Islamic State than Christians. Well, yes, because there's a kind of civil war going on. But that still doesn't take away from the fact that this is something that is motivated by a religious ideology. And then here's the core thing. You go back to the core text, and you will find that there are two things that are very different in between Christianity and Islam. First of all, Islam did spread by force. And secondly, its core text, the Quran, does actually encourage that. And I'll actually add a third. And this is very key, and because our politicians don't get it, they cannot respond adequately to Islam. Islam, unlike Christianity, is a political system. Now, I'll say this, when Christianity has been adopted by politicians to be used for a political system, de facto, it becomes oppressive. But that's not what Christianity is. But Islam is a political system. And all it will take is for about 10% of the population of this country to become Muslim. And our politics and our country will be changed forever. So, totally against what they call Islamophobia. But we should be allowed to discuss what Islam is and what it means and why it drives some people to an ideology which allows them to blow themselves up in order to kill other people.
They are bound together by the single evil ideology of Islamist extremism that preaches hatred, sows division, and promotes sectarianism.
Our Prime Minister. Now, she gave a very strong speech after the London the latest London attack.
But it is time to say enough is enough. Everybody needs to go about their lives as they normally would. Our society should continue to function in accordance with our values. But when it comes to taking on extremism and terrorism, things need to change.
But she spoke about our pluralistic British values.
It will only be defeated when we turn people's minds away from this violence and make them understand that our values, pluralistic British values, are superior to anything offered by the preachers and supporters of hate.
Pluralistic British values. Now that's fascinating because I think that's almost an oxymoron. Because if they're British values, then that means do they exclude other things that are not their values? And pluralistic, what does that mean? How does all of that work? I think that Theresa May and others really struggle to define what British values actually are and where they stem from. Because actually, this country was based upon Christian values. So what are we going to replace them with? And here's the fascinating thing. I've heard politicians seriously say that religious fundamentalists include those, for example, who don't accept same-sex marriage because that's not part of British values of tolerance.
While we have made significant progress in recent years, there is, to be frank, far too much tolerance of extremism in our country.
You say, well, don't be ridiculous. They're not going to compare you. Yes, they are. That's what they do. Because our atheist friends live in their own fundamentalist world where they say this value is right and that value is wrong. And if you don't accept the values that we put forward, then there's something wrong with you.
So we need to become far more robust in identifying it and stamping it out across the public sector and across society.
Now, our atheist friends, oh, no, we're not fundamentalists. Yes, you are. And yes, there are many atheists who are fundamentalists who have their fundamental beliefs who cannot see beyond it. They have no categories or nuances in which to place people. So if you don't accept their values, then you are exactly the same as a Nazi or as an Islamist terrorist.
We cannot allow this ideology the safe space it needs to breed.
That's how they think. That's the danger. It is dumbed down thinking. It is shallow thinking. It is not nuanced thinking at all.
And we need to do everything we can at home to reduce the risks of extremism online.
That is where we are going. I can see ourselves within a year's time with enhanced terrorism laws where we're finding that people say, you can't say that because it's against the terrorism laws. We're going to have to be really careful here and keep an eye on this.
But the whole of our country needs to come together to take on this extremism.
Let's take one of these values. So, I read a fantastic article in The Spectator, which we will link to, from a Catholic professor who had decided again to support the Labour Party. He's socialist and so on, until he read the following in the Labour Party manifesto. Labour will continue to ensure a woman's right to choose a safe legal abortion, and we will legislate to extend that right to women in Northern Ireland. And that was just a step too far for him. You see, you question abortion. That's going against basic values. Is it really? Again, who discerns these values? Or take this extraordinary story from the United States. Let's just go away from the United Kingdom or the United States. And a farmer who was banned from a farmer's market. Why? Because he supported traditional marriage. A man called Tennis, who is a Roman Catholic, that he put on his Facebook that he supported marriage being between a man and a woman, and he received a letter from city officials saying that he would be removed. He wasn't allowed to be in the marketplace. It's just extraordinary. This is in East Lansing Farmers Market in Michigan. Now, stop and think about that. You, as a farmer, say that you believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman. You're a Catholic. That's what the Catholic Church teaches. Uh-oh. You should be banned from going to farmer's market. I'm sorry. You just think, no. Can this world get any crazier? Well, yes, it can, because we have Margaret Court, the tennis player, who has a court named after her, And she's expressed a very strong opinion against same-sex marriage, and suddenly everyone's up in arms. And
Christian fundamentalists against moderate Christians, isn't it? It's the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Extremists are extremists.
People are talking about boycotting playing on Margaret Court. Even Andy Murray has weighed in with his wit and wisdom, telling us, you know, of course it's terrible and so on. And people are saying we shouldn't play on this and the court should be renamed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's going to be interesting, because I'm about to fly out to Australia on Etihad Airlines, and we have the Etihad Stadium. I wonder how homosexuals are treated in the Arab Emirates. That would be interesting if we start banning all different... I mean, what are we going to do with China? What are we going to do with Russia? It really is utter and sheer hypocrisy. And Court actually pointed out something that I think is quite true. She said basically that the gay mafia from the United States, who have lots of money, were pushing this. And I think you'll find that there is this agenda where everything keeps getting pushed this way. Now, let's move on to something else.
That will require some difficult and often embarrassing conversations.
Every week I come in and say, it can't get any worse. But this is, I honestly, if I come back in a month's time and this last article that we're going to look at, this last thing we're going to look at, if you can find anything worse, I feel like giving you a prize.
David, do I have to have my finger on the bleep button here?
Well, you probably will. Now, I do have to warn you that if you have young children present, then there is one word in here that you may not want to hear. But I'm afraid I do have to use it. That's all I'm going to say. It's an article from The Spectator entitled, "Do Penises Cause Climate Change? Discuss." Now, Peter Boghossian and James Lindsay are two US academics. They managed to get a paper published in a social sciences journal arguing that the penis is not in fact a male reproductive organ, but merely a social construct, and that furthermore, penises are responsible for causing climate change. This is a spoof article, but it was accepted as serious. They said this: "We suspected that gender studies is crippled academically by an overriding, almost religious belief that maleness is the root of all evil. So they included lots of derogatory language about male and male vices, such as manspreading, a complaint levied against men for sitting with their legs spread wide, which they described as, quote, akin to raping the empty space around him," unquote. Now, what is funny about this, I mean, it's funny, but it's pathetic, because this was a peer-reviewed piece. You know how my atheist friends go, oh, have you got peer-reviewed evidence for this and peer-reviewed? Look, peer review is mince. Peer review, what does that mean in so many, especially if you can get something published like this? It's kind of the gold standard. The Spectator article says that Matt Ridley points out that peer review is just a way for academics to defend their pet ideas and reward their chums. You know, fraudulent research is often getting passed. Now, I just think that this whole idea, what kids are being taught, there's a lack of history. In the British general election, when I'm listening to people discussing things, especially younger people, they have no concept of what happened last year. Never mind 5 years, 10 years, 50 years ago. And those who don't know their history are condemned to repeat it. You know, our kids are being taught this whole postmodern thing. It's just absolutely horrendous. And you imagine an article like that. I'm sorry. Why am I laughing? Because it really is quite pathetic. Sometimes I'm beginning to wonder a little bit whether we shouldn't increase the voting age to about 30, because people are taking so much longer to mature. And basically, they're voting fodder. You know, let me come back to our general election here. There's this constant thing about get the young vote out, because it's assumed they're all going to vote the way that their lecturers or their teachers tell them, because that is what our schools are doing now. Our schools are not educating. Our schools are largely indoctrinating, and indoctrinating into the liberal progressive worldview. Sorry, that's the rant from somebody who would consider himself left-wing, but that is what's happening. We're breeding this dumbed-down culture. That's why we've got Solas, by the way. That's why we want to challenge you. That's why, if you disagree with what's said here, that's fine. Let us know. We want people. We want to provoke people to think, to disagree, to enlighten, and to educate us. But we live in a world where in academia, the enlightened, the wise, and the intelligent can be taken in by an article which claims the human male reproductive organ isn't that at all, but a social construct that is the cause of climate change. Well, isn't it wonderful as a Christian to be able to go back to the solid truth and the reality and the facts of the gospel? That's what we want to bring. We want to show you how that gospel connects with our culture. Have a good couple of weeks. If you're in Australia, hopefully see you then. God bless.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get, they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.